This is Talk Is Cheap on KBWLP 97.3 FM, Eugene Peace Works Independent Community Radio. All right, on April 22nd, I went down to Roseburg, not to flag a ride, but to say no to the Blue and Gold Logging Project rally held by Cascadia Wildlands at the Bureau of Land Management. And then the next day, I got back here to my house, and I have two beehives here, two Waray beehives. I have two Waray beehives here, and I had a swarm, so I called up Beehive Brian, and he came here right away to take the swarm, because we need these swarms for other hives. So, and because of that, I don't have really good sound quality, but you can hear me talking to Beehive Brian while he takes the swarm away, gently takes the swarm away, so the bee swarm. So, and yeah, go to Backyard Farmer if you want Beehive Brian's phone number. I don't want to give out Beehive Brian's phone number, but if you have problems with bees, he's your go-to guy. A couple of things, commentary here. First of all, property rights. Whether you believe in capitalism or not, you cannot just do whatever you want with your property. You do have you are part of a larger system, larger community. I'm sorry, but you cannot just do whatever you want with your property. Another thing I just want to say is, hey, news media, are you really not going to say that during this nuclear time of nuclear brinksmanship, you are not going to say that Israel has nuclear weapons? And I can guarantee you, I'll give you my personal guarantee right now, that Iran will give up their nuclear weapons program if Israel gives up their nuclear weapons program. All right, so coming up, the Say No to the Blue and Gold Logging Project rally and beehive swarm removal and how to help the bees on KPWLP 97.3 FM, Eugene Peace Works Independent Community Radio. Thanks for listening. Tell your friends, support independent media.
We're at a rally out here in front of the Roseburg, Oregon State Bureau of Land Management. You're protesting trees. The harvesting of the forest. Why are you out here?
So we are out here today to protest against the BLM's approval of the Blue and Gold project. This project is located west of Yonkala in the Umpqua watershed. It contains vast swaths of intact old growth forests that are absolutely essential for mitigating the worst impacts of climate change, providing habitat for endangered species, slowing down rapid wildfire spread, and ensuring that communities have safe drinking water. The forests in this Blue and Gold project haven't been logged before, and now the agency is proposing to build roads and log these forests that are irreplaceable. And so we're out here today with community members from Roseburg and from around the region to protest this awful sale.
All right, and so is this public land or private land?
This is, it's public land.
Okay.
Yeah.
So just some questions about private land, though. Is Weyerhaeuser, they use clear cutting. Is clear cutting sustainable?
Clear cutting forests down is not a sustainable logging practice at all. That the process of growing trees as tightly and as quickly as possible doesn't create any opportunity for any other benefit that forest provides besides timber. These areas are denuded of healthy streams and waterways, of habitat for species who rely on these places, and they are a driver of rapid wildfire spread and a source of ignitions for many of the wildfires that we've seen lately.
All right, and so this public land, they're saying it's multi-use and that it should be used for a lot of different things, but clear cutting is that a proper use of public lands?
That we absolutely oppose the agency's approval of aggressively logging public lands for corporate profit. The practice that the BLM approves for this project, the Blue and Gold project, is basically almost exactly a clear cut. They leave a few trees behind so they can call it and green not a clear cut, so they can greenwash it. But they are removing, 90% of the trees in the area and just leaving a few left to stand and be susceptible to blowdown and other insects and disease potential, and basically just strip their personality as a forest. If you remove the majority of the forest, then it's not a forest anymore. It becomes a plantation where the purpose of it is for harvest, much like a monocrop corn plantation you'd see in the middle America. So it's
or your front lawn.
Yeah. Or your front lawn, or many of the private forest lands in Oregon. A lot of people will look out into the landscape and or the horizon in Oregon and see lots of trees, but really those are all just largely just one species of trees that have one single purpose, and that is for timber production and not for the health of our climate, the species, and our communities.
All right, and so what about the rights of nature argument too? That nature itself has a right to survive and live, and what about my right to know that there's some space on the earth that isn't touched by man and is left alone?
Well, I would push back on that a little bit, because humans are for sure a part of nature, and indigenous peoples in this region have been stewarding the lands for time immemorial. The only reason why we have the old growth forests that so many Oregonians love now is because of centuries of careful management done by indigenous peoples, as well as allowing a lot of wildfires to impact the landscape. So we are a part of this ecosystem, and as settlers, I myself, speaking as a settler, an unwelcome guest in this region, I think it's really important that we recognize that this history that we're all living in, that that includes this management that has been done by indigenous peoples. But I totally agree that nature should have their own rights as well. Nature is dynamic, and it is part of us, and as much as we are a part of it, and it's essential that we recognize that as a species, or else we're doomed.
Well, and so you mentioned Native American peoples. They manage the forest rather than just extracting, using it as a resource simply for extraction. They worked with nature's cycles.
I think that's somewhat of an oversimplification. I mean, there's a lot of different tribes and indigenous folks who live here who have different approaches, and relevant to where they are living. Peoples who lived in the valleys and traveled around up into the higher Cascades, for example, like they would have different purposes and goals for their management, and still do. I don't want to speak for tribes as the federally recognized tribes that exist in Oregon right now, but I definitely encourage you to check out what they're working on.
All right, and then private versus public lands. Even private ownership, you have a little bit of an obligation to the community that you're living in, right? They shouldn't be just, when they clear cut stuff, it affects the watershed. The entire watershed. So don't they have an obligation to, doesn't Weyerhaeuser have an obligation to the community to not extract things without an eye to the rest of the community?
Yeah, you would hope that they would feel that obligation more intensely, but unfortunately, I have seen and spoken with many rural landowners who are living right next to a clear cut, a Weyerhaeuser clear cut. I was just hanging out with some community members in the Alsea area. They are mobilizing to fight against another different BLM project called Aloha Trout. And that project, it flows right in through that project. It is flowing creeks and waterways that I've seen salmon spawn in, and right behind people's houses, right behind the currently intact BLM land, are Weyerhaeuser clear cuts, where they have gone through, removed 100% of the trees, and then used basically Agent Orange chemicals to aerial spray where they have just clear-cutted, using glyphosate, atrazine, these kind of really known horrible carcinogens on the landscape. That seeps, as soon as there's a big rain, that seeps right into the creeks and the waterways where these communities are getting their drinking water. So, as much as Weyerhaeuser will, put pretty green photos all over their website to try to say that their practices are sustainable and that they care about communities, it's just not true. People are actually impacted by their actions every day, and it's important.
So when I go to Home Depot, am I buying, is the lumber at Home Depot, that some of that has been from the Amazon rainforest, and some of it is not sustainable lumber that I'm buying at Home Depot? And why are we still building houses out of sticks? I mean, even the Three Little Pigs didn't build their house out of sticks.
Uh-huh.
You know, and this is I keep seeing buildings with this stressed skin. You know, they have hemp building panels now.
Mm-hmm.
That, why are we still building out of wood? And is that what I'm getting when I consume, when I go down to Home Depot? Am I getting truly sustainable lumber?
When you go down to Home Depot, you're most likely not getting a sustainable supply there. It's not that we can't ever build with trees and logs and wood ever again, or we're necessarily that we shouldn't ever. It's the rapid expansion and the way that we build our buildings is completely unsustainable. You know, throw things up in the cheapest way possible, and then they break down a few years later. You know, if you look at a lot of the old buildings that are still standing that were built with wood, if they're well taken care of, they can last a lot longer. And so it's a consumption issue, it's a building code issue, and it's also a profit motivation issue. So that we can truly have forests and remove trees from them for our building materials in a sustainable way. I could point you to many examples of people actually doing that. Actually, the Menominee, I'm saying that wrong, sorry.
It's Mennonite?
There's a tribe in, I'll send it to you later. But I could point you to many examples of sustainable forestry practices that have really long rotations for removing trees for building materials, and so these models are out there, but it's going to take a societal change and a cultural change around reuse and mindful building.
We could, now they use a feller buncher, you'd have more jobs with horse logging and sustainable logging practices would create more jobs too, well-paid jobs instead of just using a machine straight out of the Lorax.
Absolutely.
All right. Anything else you want me to ask?
Oh, I was just going to comment on what you just said. There was a big movement around the Green New Deal a few years ago, and a big tenet of the Green New Deal that people in the Pacific Northwest were pushing for was around really thoughtful and meaningful sustainable forestry that put people back into the forest to work in the forest and be, you know, be really nuanced and careful about the trees we're removing for our needs. And we do need wood, and that's okay. But the way in which we're doing it is just not sustainable. And so, there are models out there. There is hope. There are people, loggers, who want this. And there are, it's just a matter of fighting against these multi-billion-dollar corporations that are, that rule the Pacific Northwest.
Yeah, I'd like to live in a world where we just use wood for decoration. I don't need it as structural anymore. There's steel. Steel is 80% recycled, or a high percentage of steel is recycled.
Yeah, there's definitely great alternative building materials out there. Yeah,
mud, sandbag and straw bale and things like that. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So what can people do to help the forest?
Yeah, I would say get involved in local organizing efforts to defend the last remaining forests that exist in your region. There are out there, and it's important that the public is aware that there are these really precious areas that need your voice. And I think also putting pressure on your elected officials, our Oregon senators, and your local representatives, and telling them that you don't support this this old growth logging in the midst of this climate crisis that we're in.
All right, did you want to give your name?
Yeah, my name is Madeline, M-A-D-E-L-I-N-E, Cowen, C-O-W-E-N, and I'm the grassroots organizer with Cascadia Wildlands.
All right, thanks very much. Thanks for doing this.
Yeah. It's outrageous that our public agency, BLM, is going to clear-cut an old-growth forest in this day and time. You know, that's what they did back in the 70s, but now we know better.
Right, this is the lungs of the earth.
The lungs of the earth, absolutely. And there's a spotted owl abandoned site in it.
And what sequesters more carbon, new growth or old growth?
Old growth. Because old growth is really big, so old growth puts out a quarter of an inch. It's a lot of carbon they just put out.
And which is better for fire suppression?
Oh, old growth, yeah. Definitely.
Because there's more moisture and more
moisture and less sun and more shade, and it's not as hot and dry.
More moisture, yeah.
As a clear cut, yeah.
What, is there something you want to say?
Yeah, so my name is Andrew, and I live about 10 minutes from this timber sale, and it's on public land, and it's in the places where I forage for mushrooms and go hiking with my dogs, and it's pretty stark, the difference when I drive up there, how all of the areas of forest that have old growth trees are currently marked out for logging by the BLM, and the areas of old timber plantations that are too dense and are more of a fire hazard are marked out for logging, the areas that could actually use some management. And so it makes me sad that when I go up there in the future, it's going to be a lot more small, dense trees, and we're going to lose some of that intact old growth and mature forest. That is the rarest type of forest on the landscape in the Oregon Coast Range right now.
Well, so this is supposed to be mixed use. Their argument is that this is mixed use, that they're, you know, letting them harvest because it's supposed to be. So, but this is
Over 50% of BLM lands has already been clear cut. How mixed use is that?
Right, and so how when. But it's impacting you in your mushroom hunting and your recreation.
Yes.
So it's stopping you from having a pleasurable experience in the forest. So how is that mixed use?
I have no shortage of timber plantations to hike in, fair cuts to hike in, although they're too hot and don't have any shade. I like to go to the old growth forest because they have more plant species. They're just more interesting to hike in. It's cooler. There's a study that found that old growth forests are at least 10 degrees cooler on average than a timber plantation, just because you have that much more shade. They're also more fire resilient. So if you hike in an old growth forest, a lot of the big trees have fire scars on them because they survived one or more fires. Whereas when a fire goes through a timber plantation, the trees are smaller and more closer together. So it's more often the case that all of those trees die and then you start with nothing. Whereas when a fire goes through an old growth forest, you usually have trees left standing in some kind of forest structure to provide shade for regrowth.
But so that's what I mean. You have a right, though, as a citizen, to know that there's some areas that are untouched and not just extracted, not just used for resource extraction.
I believe so, and it is sad that they seem to keep disappearing. And what means so much to me about Blue and Gold is it is 10 to 15 minutes from my house. I otherwise have to drive an hour to find old growth forest to hike in. So it is. I don't want to lose that.
Because what I'm trying to do is show that they don't even follow their own rules. Here's their own rules against them. That this is not, mixed use.
It's management.
You're stopping mixed use by doing this.
It's management primarily by timber.
And for corporations.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. And I live in a wood house. I love to build with wood, but I do not like as much the amount of clear cutting we're doing, and it has a lot of impacts. In fact, when you go down this road and you look at the east side of the Coast Range straight ahead, there's a big clear cut on a steep slope, and both drainages are completely washed out. You can see it right over there.
Oh yeah.
And those blew out a creek.
So it affects the water supply. It affects the water. The whole watershed is affected when they do this.
Yes.
It impacts the whole watershed.
Old growth forest also is better at keeping more groundwater there for the streams and for drinking water. And on Green Valley Road outside of Oakland, where I live, water is very scarce. People have really deep wells. A lot of them run out in the summer and they rely on water storage. And so we need more old growth forests in the headwaters.
And so water around. This is public land, but the question I'm asking too is, doesn't Weyerhaeuser have an obligation to their neighbors as being part of a community? Just because you own something, you still have neighbors around you, and you're part of a community
that
you have a responsibility. No, but I mean, in theoretically,
do you think they give a shit about their neighbors?
But they should.
If they can make more money by taking every tree, they will. The neighbors be damned. Besides, clear cuts don't harm anybody.
But that's illegal. Even in a capitalist society, you have an obligation to your neighbors. In my house, I can't just dump crap in the street where I live, and I can't just dump crap in the river, right?
But you can cut every
as a
tree,
homeowner.
But you can cut every tree on your own property. That is not illegal.
Right, but not if it impacts my neighbors. I can't cut a tree down if it adversely impacts my neighbors.
You can, yes. There is no law that says you have to protect your neighbors if you do logging.
But you understand the point I'm making is that they are not acting as a part of the community.
Yes.
They're just extracting things, and most of these logs are not used by the community here. They're sent somewhere else.
No, I would like to see a model of any logging on public land happens for habitat restoration, and the logs have to go towards sustainable housing projects for low-to-income, medium-income people.
Right, and salvage logging too. We need logs to be left for the critters.
Yes. So the most damaging kind of logging is salvage logging, because you have a fire that disturbs the soil. Then you run all over it with machines and drag trees up or down steep slopes, and then you just create a bigger problem.
I tell you, one advantage of this BLM sale is it's not going to get exported to Asia, because BLM can't export any public logs. The Forest Service and BLM can't export logs from public lands. So at least it's going to go to our local mills, which none of the private landowners send to our local mills. They all send it right over to Asia.
Wow.
All right, but that's the other question I'm asking. When I go down to Home Depot and buy wood down there, is that sustainable wood? Isn't there some old growth in there? And some of it comes from Amazon.
It's probably from Canada, and they're cutting more old growth than we are.
And it's also coming from Brazil, I noticed. Some of their... So when Weyerhaeuser says that when they have a sustainability certificate for sustainable lumber at Home Depot, that is false.
No, they're killing our salmon with that lumber. And if you want sustainable lumber, buy lumber from someone with a sawmill who you know is doing small scale logging that is not fair cutting.
Yeah, but people can't do that. I mean, people don't know that, and they need a 2x4.
But now there's hemp building panels, and also they build commercial buildings with steel all the time. Steel is recycled, mostly
this
recycled.
This built with steel. Right here, this brand new
building. Have you
heard
about cob houses?
And cob, there's all kinds of alternatives, but I keep seeing houses literally built out of sawdust and buildings literally built out of sawdust.
Yeah.
Why are we doing that?
I need some siding for my house, so a friend is milling some cedar siding from me.
Okay, thank you very much. Thanks for being here.
From hazard trees that he's cut from campgrounds.
Yeah.
So it's not coming from a clear cut.
Check out Hempitecture. Now, they're building hemp building panels.
Uh-huh.
They just came out with a hemp building panel. You know, like a 4x8 sheet of plywood, like stressed skin, only made with hemp fiber.
Cool.
Yeah.
I'll look into that.
And I'm looking at hemp insulation too.
What's your name?
My name's Curtis.
Curtis. I'm Andrew.
Andrew.
Great to meet you.
This is Talk is Cheap on KPW LP 97.3 FM, Eugene Peaceworks Independent Community Radio. All right, now it's time for Beehive Brian removing a swarm from my arbor. If you can visualize one of those cedar lattices that you buy at Jerry's Hardware, that's what he's removing it from with a 2x6. They're underneath a 2x6 where a lattice is fastened to a 2x6. Thanks for listening. Tell your friends, support independent media.
Aren't they going where it's warmest? It's been very cold, so she's looking for warmth. And so the mint stops them from returning, or?
Yeah, it kind of rubs out the queen sand a little bit, so it's not returning.
We don't want any more swarms?
These stragglers.
It's not going to last very long. Yeah, okay.
Yeah. They might land on this same fence tomorrow.
Uh-huh. So it kind of tells them to go find shelter. Don't hang out here. You need to find shelter. There's nothing happening here.
Find your family.
Yeah. Get. Right, and so that one apple tree or one or two apple trees is not enough pollen for a hive, right? They need a whole field, a whole orchard.
They need an entire neighborhood.
Yeah, okay.
Nectar and pollen.
Well, I think they've found something or they wouldn't be living here.
So let's hope they find some pesticide-free yards.
Right. That's my concern. And like I say, that creek over there is just a dumping ground, a hazardous waste site. But there's plenty of blackberry bramble for the, you know, that they're getting.
Especially in late May and June, they start flowering.
Yeah. So I'm just saying, it's the blackberry that's coming right out of that channel.
Let's just hope the city isn't spraying it.
Yeah. No, well, it's they come and cut it every year.
That's a good sign. If they're cutting it back every year, then they're probably not herbicide spraying it.
Well, and I got these plum trees right here, too. There's three of them back there that are, whatever, 40-year-old plum trees.
They can't produce drones unless they're wealthy in honey and resources. So they require a lot of resources for very little return. So I consider that a sign of a wealthy hive.
Well, I would think having pollen real close by at first, you know, when you're young, maybe, is, even though that's not enough, at least it's a... I mean, don't they have a pattern that they follow for energy in their scouting? I thought I saw something like that. They conserve energy for the stuff that's nearer or farther away, whatever
they have. So that's exactly right. Just that a tree right here is probably more valuable than 10 of those trees that a neighborhood over.
Because
it requires so little energy to fly to it.
Right.
You can't underestimate the value of even a few good bee plants right there near the hives.
This place is a good spot for bees.
So I don't know if you're into honey, but my method is I don't actively harvest from the hives, but if you notice one has died, say October, November, you see no activity on a warm, sunny day, that'd be the time to open it up and take whatever honey they left behind.
Okay.
It's the most non-invasive way. It's easy for you.
Yeah, I'm not. Yeah, that seems easy. I'm not anxious to get honey. I definitely don't want to sell. I'm sitting here going, what if I have too much honey and I have to sell it? That would be a hassle.
You might end up...
to get canning jars and all that crap. I don't want to do that.
It's a lot of work.
So, but then that means the hive is dead, though.
So that's the only time you'd harvest it if you use that method.
But we could leave a comb in there again. Can't we leave that same comb in there and do it again?
If one of these colonies die in the future, they're going to have built that entire hive. And the top box is usually where they have all the honey. The bottom box, maybe partial honey and a lot of old comb.
Mm-hmm.
So I usually take the honey box, harvest it, and then the bottom box becomes the top box for a swarm next spring, and then the empty box that you harvested beneath it.
Okay. Because, the guy at the bar said that he waits 2 years before he harvests his, but I would do with your advice because I'm mainly doing this to help the bees more so than get honey. Honey is just a side benefit. I mean, Bill Wood, too, I told you that he got pissed when I mentioned eating pollen. He was, like, very upset about eating pollen. I'm like, oh, Jesus Christ, dude. I mean, I knew it was bad, but, I mean, he was just, no, that's children's food that you're taking from.
I wish I had seen that exchange in life. Another book gets intense and he tries to put people in places.
Yeah, and he had this beehive sitting right outside his door, though, so I can see why that works. I just don't give off the pheromones, and they're totally cool with it. I even walked up and it was rickety when you left, and so I put some bricks around it. And they didn't care. And in my mind, I'm going, come on, I'm just trying to help you guys. That's what I'm thinking as I'm doing that. Just trying to help you.
What is the nasty chemical? And can it get transferred to beeswax or honey? I don't know if it can. But at least the bees aren't harvesting anything from that spot where she sprayed, except for maybe water droplets, which they do harvest.
Mm-hmm.
No, I know that name because I study, you know, environmental law a little bit here, off, you know, armchair. And I know a crossbow is not good for birds.
Even if it's not glyphosate.
And I can tell she sprayed over there because those drooped. But they are, those do take over. Right?
Unfortunately, your neighbor's probably your biggest threat.
Right. Hey, good to see you, Chris. Yeah, good to see you. Thank you for coming out.
You bet. And
if, what you do with the bees.
If they swarm again, these after swarms or secondary swarms are with the virgin queens, and they happen successively really quick. So there's a small chance that they would swarm again tomorrow, but we'll see.
Is there a goop that you're scooping in there? What makes them all clinging in the box? What?
When they're in a swarm cluster like that, they're typically hanging leg to leg, clinging together, which enables them to hang from a tree branch or anything. As long as a few bees are hanging on to the branch, then they just hang on to each other's legs and link up.
Huh. So it's just a instinct.
Yeah, it's like a natural trait they have to let them hang together. And it also helps when they're building comb when they're back in the hive.
Uh-huh.
And they move into an empty cavity, they're just going to hang leg to leg from the ceiling and start building beeswax comb downward.
Wow.
Passing the wax scales. So right now I'm just trying to see if the queen might still be up here. So we're not sure yet if I got her. I wasn't able to see her in there. They're eagerly going in. That was probably mission accomplished.
Neat. Yeah, there's been that cluster right underneath that board the whole time. She's in there, huh? Maybe.
Yeah, it's probably that site they're returning to over and over again.
Yeah. They're going for that. Underneath that board.
Under here?
Yeah, underneath the... But you know best, don't listen to me. I'm just saying. I mean, I'm wondering is all.
No, I think that's a good observation. Anywhere where they keep clustering, she might still be there.
They're hanging on to something there.
I might even open the lid one more time here.
I think you got... They were hanging on to something there on that one. No, I've seen videos of guys on the net along. This was a long time ago too, where the guy's just reaching in with his arm and grabs the queen, and the bees are all over his arm. Yeah. It might have been Bill Wood doing it.
Not be surprised. I try to handle the queen as little as possible because I don't want to risk injuring her.
Right. Well, no, I know they have vacuums that seem. It seems fairly humane to use a vacuum.
Yeah, they're really. Still all over this, returning to it in great numbers.
Yeah, they're going on the other side of the...
If I get a look over there and see what's going on.
So can you point out a drone again?
Yeah. These big bunny bees here.
They can't produce drones.
Almost every, 4 out of every 5 bees are going right now.
And so why are they out here in the spring?
They're going on mating flights, mating with the virgin queen. Spreading the good genes.
Well, I think having pollen...
Right on. Get down. Bow chicka bow wow. Oh yeah. So they're performing the birds and the bees.
Exactly.
You're saying okay. And not all the hive. So there's more. There's females here in this group here too, right?
Yep. The little worker bees returning with pollen. If they don't have pollen, probably nectar or water or resins. The 4 things they.
So there's a ratio. So it's almost a 50-50 ratio between male and female bees, right?
Right now it looks like about that.
And but there's males that are not drones.
All drones are males.
All drones are males, but there's not a second type of male?
Nope.
Just a drone.
Queen, worker, and drone.
Okay, so the worker bees are female.
All of them.
All of the worker bees. Wow, okay, that's what I mean. I didn't know that.
They're more like asexual nuns almost. They don't have... active ovaries.
Right, but they're nurses in a way. They also take care of the young. They're the nursery.
Yes.
And the drones are more of a defensive thing and...
More like sacrificial. Their cells are laid closest to the entrance, so if a rodent got in there and started eating at it, they'd be the first to die.
Right.
So they're the first line.
Kamikaze bees. So who gets the pollen?
Only the workers.
The workers are female. Go out and get the pollen.
The male drone bees have a free lunch. They don't work for it.
Wow. So they sit at home. They're home husbands. I mean, they don't take care of the kids either.
Yeah. But they're also free to roam and go to other hives.
I wish I could remember what they call that. My father was like that too. He just wanted to have kids and just let the mom take care of everything. Was the guy in the 50s, you know, that was my father, Depression era. Was the wife took care of the kids. He brought home the bacon, but didn't really deal with the kids very much.
This is the classic dad here.
So, but he's really just a soldier, basically.
Soldier being a party animal, right?
Yeah.
He goes out and mates with the queen, but if he successfully mates, that's the end of his life.
But what would you call that? And what's the anthropomorphic analogy? Is a male, he's a Roman soldier that lives off of taxation.
Yeah, but he has no stinger, so he has no weapon.
Oh, right.
Let's call him a nomadic freeloader.
Yeah, well, but or a freeloader kamikaze, then, because you are the first to die. So you get, that's why you get your food for free. I'm overanalyzing this, but okay. But I just thought it interesting.
Did you say that's where you moved it to, or is that where we put it?
No, that's where I moved it to.
That's a great spot.
So if you can see the pollen, the little white dots on the back of the bees, if I'm even filming this, Brian, Beehive Brian, is saying that that is a sign that we have a successful hive because they're bringing pollen in there.
That's right.
And see, I know, so it gets morning sun, comes blasting in here, believe it or not, even though this is back here. And then I'm hoping they have, in the wintertime, I'm hoping they get heat on the other side of that fence. See, in the evening, yep. They're going to get evening sun in the winter. And so that's what I was hoping it would keep them warm. And they seem to be active a little longer than the one that was more exposed over there.
I like that spot. I know you were advocating for it when I was here.
Yeah.
And for some reason, I talked you out of it.
Well, I would like to put the other one over here, but because, like I said, she's spraying, see? And I don't think these guys are going to spray back here. So now they're going into the hole because we're pretty sure we found the queen. Brian did. I stood by here and tried to draw them off.
Oh, yeah. It's like a whirlpool right now. Bees just pouring out. No.
Yeah, very docile, though. Oh, they're pouring out?
In,
yeah. I can see them going in, yeah.
The only thing they got pissed off about was that yellow brush. They tried to sting the bristles on it.
Yellow to them is some signal, huh? Yeah, I'm glad it's not wasps and yellow jackets, boy. They chase you down.
These even smell sweet.
Do they? Yeah.
They smell very nice.
I just do not give off the pheromone of fear. It doesn't work with me in birds, though. Birds can sense that I'm scared of them. I can't deal with a parrot or something, but insects I can handle.
I think we're looking pretty good there, so I'm just going to rest this on a stable spot and then brush these off and rub their area with mint. Do you have any mint around here? Can you see that?
I can see them clustering again, yeah, on the board.
They're starting to pour in the hole in the box now.
Oh, they are? Oh, okay, wow.
Here, all right.
to see Britannia rule again. Send our colored cousins home again. Talk to me more often than you did. No!
you had to go your own way. Have you broken any holds of me? Just come and swerve your honor. Oh!
together in bands. And when they give you their all, some stagger and fall. After all, it's not easy. Banging your heart against some mad mother's wall.
Good night.